Chapter 21. As for yourself, may I not hope that time will calm your exquisite feelings too? I leave Marianne behind me to console you. She admires you as you deserve to be admired, and with a constancy which I entreat you to try and imitate. Do, my dear Mr. Plush, try for the sake of your sincere friend and admirer, A.P.S.S. I leave the wedding dresses behind for her. The diamonds are beautiful, and will become Mrs. Plush admirably. ... This was all. Confession. And there stood the footman sniggering, and that odious Mary Ann half a grin, half a laughing at me. Who has she gone off with? ... roars I, and Mary Ann, smiling with one eye, just touched the top of one of the John's canes who was going out with the notes, to put off the breakfast. It was Silvertop then. I bust out of the house in a state of demoniacal excitement. The story of that elopement I have no art to tell. Here it is from the Morning Tatler newspaper. Elopement and High Life. The only authentic account. The neighborhood of Berkeley Square, and the whole fashionable world, has been thrown into a state of the most painful excitement by an event which has just placed a noble family in great perplexity and affliction. It has long been known among the select nobility and gentry that a marriage was on the tapis between the only daughter of a noble earl, and a gentleman whose rapid fortunes in the railway world have been the theme of general remark. Yesterday's paper, it was supposed, in all human probability would have contained an account of the marriage of James de Laplace G. Esquire, and the Lady Angelina, daughter of the Right Honorable the Earl of B. Recress. The preparations for this ceremony were complete. We had the pleasure of inspecting the rich trousseau, prepared by Miss Twiddler, of Pall Mall, the magnificent jewels from the establishment of Messrs. Store and Mortimer. The elegant marriage cake, which, already cut up and portioned, is, alas, not destined to be eaten by the friends of Mr. de Laplace G., the superb carriages, and magnificent liveries, which had been provided in a style of the most lavish yet tasteful sumptuosity. The Right Reverend the Lord Bishop of Bullocksmithy had arrived in town to celebrate the nuptials, and is staying at Mivart's. What must have been the feelings of that venerable prelate, what those of the agonized and noble parents of the Lady Angelina when it was discovered, on the day previous to the wedding, that her ladyship had fled the paternal mansion. To the venerable bishop the news of his noble niece's departure might have been fatal. We have it from the waiters of Mivart's that his lordship was about to indulge in the refreshment of turtle soup when the news was brought to him. Immediate apoplexy was apprehended. But Mr. Mackin, the celebrated surgeon of Westminster, was luckily passing through Bond Street at the time, and being promptly called in, bled and relieved the exemplary patient. His lordship will return to the palace, Bullocksmithy, tomorrow. The frantic agonies of the Right Honorable the Earl of Barristers can be imagined by every paternal heart. Far be it from us to disturb them, possible is it for us to describe their noble sorrow. Our reporters have made inquiries every 10 minutes at the Earl's mansion in Hill Street, regarding the health of the noble peer and his incomparable countess. They have been received with a rudeness which we deplore but pardon. One was threatened with a cane, another, in the pursuit of his official inquiries, was saluted with a pail of water. A third gentleman was menaced in a pugilistic manner by his lordship's porter, but being of an Irish nation, a man of spirit and sinew, and master of arts of Trinity College, Dublin, the gentleman of our establishment confronted the menial, and having severely beaten him, retired to a neighboring hotel much frequented by the domestics of the surrounding nobility, and there obtained what we believe to be the most accurate particulars of this extraordinary occurrence. George Frederick Jennings, third footman in the establishment of Lord Barristers, stated to our employer as follows. Lady Angelina had been promised to Mr. de Laplace for near 6 weeks. She never could abide that gentleman. He was the laughter of all the servants' hall. Previous to his elevation, he had himself been engaged in a domestic capacity. At that period he had offered marriage to Mary Ann Hoggins, who was living in the quality of lady's maid in the family where Mr. de la P was employed. Miss Hoggins became subsequently lady's maid to Lady Angelina. The elopement was arranged between those two. It was Miss Hoggins who delivered the note which informed the bereaved Mr. Plush of his loss. Samuel Buttons, page to the Right Honorable the Earl of Barristers, was ordered on Friday afternoon at 11 o'clock to fetch a cabriolet from the stand in Davies Street. He selected the cab No. 19,796 driven by George Gregory McCarty, a one-eyed man from Clonakilty, in the neighborhood of Cork, Ireland, of whom more anon, and waited, according to his instructions, at the corner of Berkeley Square with his vehicle. His young lady, accompanied by her maid, Miss Mary Ann Hoggins, carrying a bandbox, presently arrived, and entered the cab with the box. What were the contents of that box we have never been able to ascertain. On asking her ladyship whether he should order the cab to drive in any particular direction, he was told to drive to Madame Crinoline's, the eminent milliner in Cavendish Square. On requesting to know whether he should accompany her ladyship, Buttons was peremptorily ordered by Miss Hoggins to go about his business. Having now his clue, our reporter instantly went in search of cab 19,796, or rather the driver of that vehicle, who was discovered with no small difficulty at his residence, Whetstone Park, Lincoln's Inn Fields, where he lives with his family of 9 children. Having received 2 sovereigns, instead doubtless of 2 shillings, his regular fare, by the way, would have been only 1 and 8 pence, McCarty had not gone out with the cab for the 2 last days, passing them in a state of almost ceaseless intoxication. His replies were very incoherent in answer to the queries of our reporter, and, had not that gentleman himself been a compatriot, it is probable he would have refused altogether to satisfy the curiosity of the public. At Madame Crinoline's, Miss Hoggins quitted the carriage, and a gentleman entered it. McCarty describes him as a very clever gentleman, meaning tall, with black mustaches, Oxford grey trousers, and black hat and a pea coat. He drove the couple to the Euston Square station, and there left them. How he employed his time subsequently we have stated. At the Euston Square station, the gentleman of our establishment learned from Frederick Corduroy, a porter there, that a gentleman answering the above description had taken places to Derby. We have dispatched a confidential gentleman thither by a special train, and shall give his report in a second edition. Second edition. From our reporter. Newcastle, Monday. I am just arrived at this ancient town, at the Elephant and Cucumber Hotel. A party traveling under the name of Mr. and Mrs. Jones, the gentleman wearing mustaches, and having with them a blue bandbox, arrived by the train 2 hours before me, and have posted onwards to Scotland. I have ordered 4 horses, and write this on the hind boot, as they are putting to. Third edition. Gretna Green, Monday evening. The mystery is at length solved. This afternoon, at 4 o'clock, the hymeneal blacksmith, of Gretna Green, celebrated the marriage between George Granby Silvertop Esquire, a lieutenant in the 150th Hussars, third son of General John Silvertop, of Silvertop Hall, Yorkshire, and Lady Emily Silvertop, daughter of the late sister of the present Earl of Barristers, and the Lady Angelina Amelia Arethusa Anaconda Alexandrina Alicampania Anna Maria Antoanta, daughter of the last named Earl Barristers. Here follows a long extract from the marriage service in the Book of Common Prayer, which was not read on the occasion, and need not be repeated here. After the ceremony, the young couple partook of a slight refreshment of sherry and water, the former the captain pronounced to be execrable, and, having myself tasted some glasses from the very same bottle with which the young and noble pair were served, I must say I think the captain was rather hard upon mine host of the Bagpipes Hotel and Posting House, whence they instantly proceeded. I follow them, as soon as the horses have Federal, 4th edition. Shameful treatment of our reporter. Wislabinky, N.B. Monday, midnight. I arrived at this romantic little villa about 2 hours after the newly married couple, whose progress I have the honor to trace, reached Wislabinky. They have taken up their residence at the Cairngorm Arms mine as at the other hostelry, the Clachan of Wislabinky. On driving up to the Cairngorm Arms, I found a gentleman of military appearance standing at the door, and occupied seemingly in smoking a cigar. It was very dark as I descended from my carriage, and the gentleman in question exclaimed, "Is it you, Southdown, my boy? You have come too late, unless you are come to have some supper," or words to that effect. I explained that I was not the Lord Viscount Southdown, and politely apprised Captain Silvertop, for I justly concluded the individual before me could be no other, of his mistake. "Who the deuce," the captain used a stronger term, "are you, then?" Said Mr. Silvertop. "Are you Bax and Tapewell, my uncle's attorneys? If you are, you have come too late for the fair." I briefly explained that I was not Bax and Tapewell, but that my name was J. Milliseconds, and that I was a gentleman connected with the establishment of the Morning Tatler newspaper. "And what has brought you here, Mr. Morning Tatler?" Asked my interlocutor, rather roughly. My answer was frank, that the disappearance of a noble lady from the house of her friends had caused the greatest excitement in the metropolis, and that my employers were anxious to give the public every particular regarding an event so singular. "And do you mean to say, sir, that you have dogged me all the way from London, and that my family affairs are to be published for the readers of the Morning Tatler newspaper?" The Morning Tatterby, the captain here gave utterance to an oath which I shall not repeat, "and you too, sir, you impudent meddling scoundrel." "Scoundrel, sir?" Said one. "Yes," replied the irate gentleman, seizing me rudely by the collar, "and he would have choked me, but that my blue satin stock and false collar gave way, and were left in the hands of this gentleman." "Help, landlord!" I loudly exclaimed, adding, "I believe, murder!" And other exclamations of alarm. In vain I appealed to the crowd, which by this time was pretty considerable. They and the unfeeling postboys only burst into laughter, and called out, "Give it 'em, Captain!" A struggle ensued, in which I have no doubt I should have had the better, but that the captain, joining suddenly in the general and indecent hilarity, which was doubled when I fell down, stopped and said, "Well, Jims, I won't fight on my marriage day. Go into the tap, Jims, and order a glass of brandy and water at my expense, and mind I don't see your face tomorrow morning, or I'll make it more ugly than it is." With these gross expressions, and a cheer from the crowd, Mr. Silvertop entered the inn. I need not say that I did not partake of his hospitality, and that personally I despise his insults. I make them known, that they may call down the indignation of the body, of which I am a member, and throw myself on the sympathy of the public, as a gentleman shamefully assaulted and insulted in the discharge of a public duty. Thus you've shone how the flower of my affections was torn out of my bosom, and my heart was left bleeding. Angelina, I forgive thee. Mayst thou be happy. If ever heartfelt prayer for others weal availed on I, the bank on whom you trampled addresses those obligations to Evnin your BE12. I went home like a maniac, after hearing the announcement of Angelina's departure. She'd been gone 20 hours, when I heard the fatal news. Pursuit was vain. Suppose I did catch her up, they were married, and what could we do? This sensible remark I made to Earl Barrisers, when that districted nobleman expostulated with me. Who was to have been my mother-in-law, the Countess, I never from that moment's origin. My presents, trousseaux, jewels, and tea, were sent back with the exception of the diamonds and cashmere shawl, which her ladyship couldn't find. One it was whispered, that at the next booth day she was seen with a shawl exactly of the same pattern. Let her keep it. Southdown was furious. He came to me after the event, and wanted me at once £50, so that he might pursue his fugitive sister, but I wasn't to be had with that sort of jaw. There was no more money for that family. So he went away, and gave utterance to his feelings in a poem, which appeared, price 2 guineas, in the Bell Assembly. All the jewelers, mantua-makers, lacemen, coach-builders, upholsterers, ore dealers, and wedding-cake makers came pouring in with their bills, aggravating feelings already wounded beyond endurance. That madness didn't seize me that night was a mussy. Fever, fury, and rage racked my anised brain, and drove sleep from my throbbing eyelids. All night I followed Angeliner in imagination along the North Road. I vented cusses and maledictions on the infamous Silvertop. I kicked and roared in my unutterable woe. I seized my pillar. I pitched into it. Pummeled it. Strangled it. Ha ha! I thought it was Silvertop writhing in my gin grasp, and tore the audacious villain limb from limb in the terrible strength of my desper. Dot. Let me drop a cutting over the memories of that night. When my body servant came with my hot water in the morning, the livid copse in the charnel was not paler than the Gashly de la Plutch. Give me the share list, Manville, apostrophe I mechanically exclaimed. I had not perused it for the past 3 days, my attention being engaged elsewhere. Heavens and youth! What was it I read there? What was it that made me spring out abed, as if somebody had given me cold pig? I read Rewin in that share list the panic was in full operation. ... Shall I describe that catastrophe with which all England is familiar? My endrifice is to chronicle the misfortunes which lacerated my bleeding heart in October last. On the 1st of August where was I? Director of 23 companies, holder of scrip holiday premium, and worth at least a quarter of a million. On Lord Mayor's Day my St. Helena's quadded at 14 p.m., were down at 1-2 discount, my central the Chabos at 3-8 discount, my table, Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.